From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, a stunner for organized labor yesterday in Michigan. In less than a week, start to finish, a big right-to-work law pushed through a lame duck legislature, signed yesterday by the governor into law. It's a sharp hit to union standing and power in Michigan, union country. This hour on Point, the stunner in Michigan and the future of labor, organized labor, in America. You can join the conversation. Is this the end for unions? What now? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from the Michigan Capitol in Lansing is Chad Livengood. He's a reporter for the Detroit News, covering all the action at the Michigan State House over the past few days. Chad, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So have the crowds cleared out? Has everybody gone home? Are people stunned? What's the day after feeling there?
Well, they're trying to return to the normalcy of a lame duck session where they try to get a lot of things done before the end of the year. The crowds are gone. There is going to be some type of a small silent protest with people duct taping their mouth a block away from the Capitol today, but I don't think it'll be anything like we saw yesterday.
Why duct taping their mouths? Why?
Because they feel like their voice has been silenced here. This legislation was passed in 6 days, as you noted, without a public hearing, with lightning speed as far as the normal process of making a bill become a law here in Michigan. And so they do feel like they've been kind of cut off, and so they're going to continue to talk about that issue.
It got pretty messy, pretty tense there yesterday. I saw so many police in riot gear on television. What was going on that brought that force out?
Well, the state troopers in riot gear came out to secure the Romney building, named after former Governor George Romney, Mitt Romney's father. And that's where the governor's office is at, and union protesters were waging a sit-in right in front of the doors. And the Reverend Jesse Jackson was involved in this, and so they brought the troopers out to try to clear the doorways, get people off the building. They came down and formed a human wall and just walked down the line, or walked down the street and just kind of cleared the street out. Nobody really got too physical with them. There were other incidences of people who were getting too close to the doors or too close to the officers and roughhousing, and they were maced. There was an incident in which a Fox News correspondent was slugged by one of the protesters, and this was all caught on video.
And tents torn down there in the State House lawn for what, the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, and for, I don't know, a union tent or something as well.
No, they were both actually the Americans for Prosperity tents, and they were torn down. At one point, there were people trapped underneath side the tent, and I was actually inside the State House at the time because that's where all the action was, but the reports were that people, they cut open the tents to get some of the people out. Somebody got a knife out.
Wow.
Whether
yeah.
that was to damage the tent or to actually try to rescue the people stuck under there is kind of unclear. It was a chaotic event. There were 10,000 people on the lawn of the state capitol, and another 2,500 people inside as the building was at capacity throughout the entire day.
Chad, describe for us how Michigan went from, it was just a few weeks ago, looking to enshrine in the state constitution collective bargaining. That failed. But how they go from that push to this, you know, opposite push, right to work, where nobody has to pay union dues, even if they're covered by a union in their shop. How did that big swing happen?
Well, this has been a movement that's been years in the making. It's been talked about by business leaders, mostly in the western end of the state. You have a kind of a case of two Michigans. You have this thriving, growing metropolis in Grand Rapids, and around that this sort of industry, the furniture industry, Amway, the DeVos family, they have been silently, or not silently, steadily over time growing in political power, then you have the traditional labor-business relationships of the big three in Southeast Michigan, Detroit. And just as the state has changed, more people live outstate, and the politics and the political power of people who live outstate has been growing over time.
Outstate as in out away from Detroit?
And your
Republican governor there, Richard Snyder, he had positioned himself, businessman, came in 2010, positioned himself as a moderate, sort of down-the-middle guy, indicated he would not do this, and then suddenly he would, and pushed it, and of course yesterday he signed it. What about his turnaround?
Well, he indicated that the proposal to the ballot initiative that the labor union sought to enshrine collective bargaining rights in the Constitution, that essentially was a preemptive strike against right to work. He indicated that was essentially the last straw that expedited the conversations about right to work to the point that he was being essentially pressured to do this by conservative activists and the DeVos family and lots of powerful Republican financiers. So this was essentially a moment where the legislature was clamoring for this, and the governor decided he'd rather be on the train than be, be left at the station. So.
A vote of what, 58-51, I think, yesterday, pretty much party line, and yep. Through it went.
Yeah, there were six Republicans who voted against it, in part because they're from pretty strong union areas, and it would have been political suicide to essentially voted for that. That's the way Michigan used to have a lot of Republicans, especially moderate Republicans, who were friendly with labor.
Yeah,
and this has changed over the last decade or so, to the point that the there is no love lost between the Michigan Education Association and the Republican Party.
What about the Koch brothers group, Americans for Prosperity, the Koch brother billionaire industrialists and other big money folks behind this? How influential, how important were they in raising this issue, putting it on the agenda, driving it through in Michigan?
Well, they were definitely been working this for a long time. They've been, riling up activists to call the legislators and get this on the priority list. And then the homegrown millionaires here, Dick DeVos, who was ran for governor in 2006. At the time, he said that he didn't think Michigan was ready to be a right-to-work state. Him and a gentleman named Ron Weiser, who's a big Republican fundraiser and a real estate developer out of Ann Arbor, they led a charge behind the scenes in which they put up a $1.8 million radio and TV blitz. And these ads that they've been running about freedom to work law have been as heavily saturated as you would see in the last week of October during election season. So they have put up a pretty big campaign to sway public opinion about this, which was already leaning toward going to a right to work state.
Of course, there was a lot of upset there yesterday at how fast this went. People talking about Michigan's deep union history. You may have heard this, but this was State Democratic Rep Douglas Geese during the debate on the floor yesterday, saying the law was being rushed through. He warned of future labor unrest, talked about the famous 1937 clash between UAW workers and strikebreakers from the Ford Motor Company on the highway bridge in Dearborn yesterday.
This was dropped on December 6th, and now we sit here 5 days later, and we're going to pass something that will undo 100 years of labor relations. And there will be blood. There will be repercussions. We will relive the Battle of the Overpass.
There will be blood, the warning there on the floor of the Michigan State House yesterday. Union supporters outside, here's one saying that Governor Richard Snyder was setting back workers' rights.
Snyder is nothing but a union buster, and that's all he's in here for. He's a big company man, and he's going to try to set us back back to the 30s and the 20s.
Michigan yesterday becomes the 24th state in the country with right-to-work laws, meaning you may be in a union shop, but you don't have to pay union dues. Indiana was the most recent one after Oklahoma nearly a decade ago. Indiana right next door, of course, Chad. You're there in Lansing. Did Indiana's change earlier this year pose some kind of competitive threat to Michigan? Did you see companies migrating there or new companies coming in there that might have come to Michigan otherwise?
There have been varying reports of several thousands of jobs created or several dozens of companies that have come to Indiana since they became a right-to-work state in February. That certainly adds pressure to West Michigan, which is essentially in a bidding war to try to get people, because you can either go to South Bend or you can go to Niles, Michigan, or Kalamazoo. You want to get to the western end, so that definitely added the pressure. The governor cited Indiana as moving, and clearly, if there's more movement, you're going to start seeing Missouri and maybe even Ohio and Wisconsin consider taking this up. The other thing, interestingly enough, about the divisions of within the labor ranks that the opponents of right to work talk about.
Yeah.
The fear is that you will have workplaces where people will get hired in, and they say, and you'll be no longer have to either join the union or pay an agency fee, which is roughly 85% of the union dues.
Yep.
That people will, the Democrats believe that it will create a system of freeloaders, and then it'll just create animosity within the workforce. This legislation exempts police and firefighters, and the governor specifically said they don't want to create animosity in the workforce between police and firefighters, because they depend on each other in life or death situations.
Of course, police are also the ones who surround the statehouse when unions unhappy outside, so all kinds of interest running through this. Chad Livingood with the Detroit News, joining us today from Lansing. And thank you, Lansing. Thank you so much, Chad.
Thank you.
Veto, veto, union backers chanting there in the rotunda of the state capitol in Lansing, Michigan yesterday. But, of course, that is not what happened. Governor Richard Snyder signed this in the cradle of American organized labor, Michigan, now with a right-to-work law, second after Indiana in the Midwest, therefore right across the board, except for police and fire, as we just heard. We're talking about a bad day for unions in Michigan, a big right-to-work law rushed through, and we're looking this hour at the future of labor in America. Here on Fox Business News yesterday, United Auto Workers President Bob King was resigned to passage of the right-to-work bill in Michigan, but he said the union was energized for the next election. Reporter Jeff Flock here interviews him on the State House lawn just before the bill passed.
We're going to work very, extremely hard for the next 2 years to make sure that we elect people that listen to all of Michigan, not just to the DeVosses or the Koch brothers or people like that.
How much does this damage the union? I mean, you don't get to collect dues from people that say they don't want to be in the union
anymore.
Well, what is the impact?
For the UAW, we're blessed. We have members that are very loyal. We've got workplaces in right-to-work states in the South and Iowa. We get 100% participation. We do a good job for the members. We'll keep doing that good job. Members understand that if they're going to get the fairest contract, there needs to be collective power together.
We're going to get the union view from Michigan in this hour, and we'll also hear from the Americans for Prosperity, the group backed by the Koch brothers and others that's been very forceful in pushing right-to-work around the country. With us right now in the studio, Richard Freeman, professor of economics at Harvard University, a big voice in labor over many decades, watching the rise and fall of American labor. Richard Freeman, thank you very much for being here on this day.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
What's the significance of what we've just seen in Michigan?
I think it's a symbolic event that highlights the weakness and the decline of the strength of unions that's been ongoing for many, many years. I don't think it's going to have a tremendous effect inside Michigan. As Bob King just said, most, even in the southern states, mm-hmm. with right-to-work laws, when they have a union and a collective bargaining contract, most Americans join the group. And most Americans are not don't play freeloader.
If they're in a union shop, most people don't freeload. They pay dues, even though they wouldn't have to under this law.
That is correct. You also understand, even in Michigan, you didn't have to pay the union dues.
Yeah, but you had to pay an agency.
Only if your company signed an agreement with mm-hmm. the union mm-hmm. for that. So what this law actually did, it forbid companies to sign an agreement with mm-hmm. the union mm-hmm. that said, maybe as the police and fire situation discussed right. was, we don't want a few freeloaders in our workplace who might create some problems, mm-hmm. so we will sign this contract. A firm could always not sign the union security contract. So this actually is another way of phrasing this. This reduced the ability of the private sector to reach an agreement that both management and labor feel is in their best interest.
You've said this was a kick to the face of labor, not a kick to the knees that knocked their legs out from under them.
Because their knees have been wobbling for a long time.
But to the face, what about the symbolism here? It seems pretty potent.
Yeah, no, it is a strong symbolism, and it reflects a very smart and longstanding campaign by ideologues against trade unions. Because they went after Wisconsin, which was the first state yep. that ever allowed public sector bargaining, mm-hmm. and now they're going after Michigan, which is this heartland of unionism since the 1930s.
I want to listen with you for a moment here to the Michigan governor, Rick Snyder, Republican, signed this yesterday. That he was talking with NBC's Andrea Mitchell, saying that the right to work legislation may be a positive to unions over time. Good for workers. Here's the governor. He signed the legislation just a few hours after this interview.
I think it's a good thing. It's about being pro-worker. It's about giving freedom of choice to workers. And then secondly, as was mentioned in the earlier report, it's about economic development. We will get more and better jobs coming to Michigan because we're going to be more competitive.
Let's pick that apart, Richard Freeman. It's pro-worker. What do you say?
Well, then the governor's going to be in real problems with the Koch brothers and all the right-wing people. If he secretly has evidence that this is pro-worker, the business groups that provided a lot of money for this are going to be very angry at him.
But they don't say they're anti-worker. They say too, this is pro-worker. That's always in their messaging around this.
It's pro-worker, working on my terms if I'm the business guy. And it's clearly an effort to limit worker power and to reduce the ability of workers to get some more money into their pockets. That's a normal thing, I suppose, for business. If you're running a business, you'd like to have more profits in your pocket. It is restricting, as I said, the rights of other businesses to sign a union security.
If that's what they'd like to do.
If that's what they think is best for their business.
What about the freedom argument here? That's the other. This comes up as free. This is about freedom for the worker.
Well, I take a job in a union workplace, and I'm not a union. I don't like the unions, so I pay the agency fee.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm
instead of belonging,
I don't belong, and I pay 85%, yeah. I think was the mm-hmm. number given. But that can be negotiated mm-hmm. between the parties. And if I'm a religious person who has some moral, disagreement with union activity, I can give my money to charity in many cases. So it's a question of one freedom versus another, but you certainly can have a job and you just got to pay something for the common cause.
Well, President Obama came to Michigan a couple of days ago and said, this isn't about economics, this is about politics. Unions gather a lot of dues. They pour a lot into political campaigns. This is Republicans versus Democrats, and this is a Republican win. I guess the president would say by that logic.
Well, I think the one of the striking things is the extent to which the Republican Party over the last 10, 15 years has changed from being reasonably moderate on unions to being virulent against unions.
Why?
And I think it is politics. The unions have been so strong for the Democrats that they're seen as the major enemy in political campaigns. And you no longer have, I suppose, unions supporting enough Republicans. Now, the unions will then say, well, the Republicans
don't support us. So.
Yes. So it's mm-hmm. it's just a breakup of what had not been a marriage, but a let's live together and work together.
And in Michigan, with its history, you know that a lot of those legislators in the State House yesterday must have had union members in the family, maybe themselves or their mom and dad.
Yeah, no, I'm sure of that. And so, but it's a different situation, and there's a lot of political money coming in to these legislators. I assume if you're a conservative or a Republican legislator, whether you're conservative or not, and you were called up and told by the rich billionaires and millionaires that you had better vote this way, or else there'll be someone running against you in the primary or something like that. You felt the pressure.
The Detroit Free Press here saying that the word is that groups threatened the Senate Majority Leader Randy Richardsville, his leadership post in Michigan, with exactly that. So the heat was on. What about the governor's assertion here? This is about economic development. This will help Michigan develop economically, you know, more vigorously.
There's very little evidence for that. It's not a giant economic thing. You're not going to move your biotech firm from Massachusetts to Michigan because there's the right to work.
But we hear, you know, about new auto plants opening up in Tennessee and in Alabama and plants in South Carolina and right to work states.
That's true, but most companies that open up in Michigan today will open up non-union. Unions are, as I said, they're on their knees already. They're not. If I set up a new company in Michigan, the odds are my company will be non-union.
Even before this legislation.
Before this legislation. So in that sense, it's a small kick and more symbolic than actual.
And finally, it'll make Michigan more competitive, says the governor. I guess this is the other side of the same coin.
Yeah, well, if they want to be really competitive, they can lower the wages to China's, and then they'll compete with other people. I mean, the road of competitiveness by cutting workers and giving more money to the millionaires is not the American way of competitiveness.
Well, but is that where we're headed here without unions, or is there where's the floor here?
Yeah, we don't know yet where the floor is, but certainly the American people will at one point step in. They may not go through unions, but we're not going to let the country be run by a small number of extremely wealthy people who are ultimately want to reduce our workers to poverty.
Are you sure?
Poverty.
What's the evidence that that's not?
Well, we did have an election.
Yes.
And Mr. Romney had a wonderful party he was planning with a whole bunch of millionaires and billionaires, the plutocrats' party in our own city of Boston, and that party didn't occur. And the fireworks for the party had
you
to
mean
be
the election night party.
Yeah, the election night party, yeah. Limited to big donors to his campaign.
That
was
yeah.
Yeah,
they were gathered. They were ready to celebrate.
They were ready to celebrate. So, I think in one sense, the governor may be right. It may energize more people in a political setting. But it's all so divisive in a country and so kick you in the face for symbolism rather than for a real thing.
We'll see what happens. Richard Friedman, it's great to have you with us. I want to get some voices here from the fray. With us from Lansing, Michigan right now is Katie Oppenheim. She's chair of the University of Michigan Professional Nurse Council, represents nearly 5,000 registered nurses, important union there. She was at the demonstrations in Lansing yesterday when the measure passed. Katie, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from Raleigh, North Carolina is Dallas Woodhouse, state director in Right to Work State, North Carolina, in the chapter there of Americans for Prosperity, the group funded partially by Charles and David Koch, the big industrial billionaires. Dallas Woodhouse, thank you very much for joining us.
For heaven's sakes.
Good to have you with us, Mr. Woodhouse. Thanks for joining
us. Good to be with you.
Katie, let me come first to you. What's it mean that this passed yesterday?
Well, this is only the beginning. What happened yesterday here in Lansing was we had 13,000 people come together to show that we're not going to take this sitting down. So for us, especially if we're registered nurses, that we know that we've been able to use collective bargaining to help us have safety equipment, adequate rest between shifts, safe staffing, all of those kinds of things. And we know that that's something that would not occur without us having the ability to collectively bargain.
But you can still collectively bargain, right? That's not been, that's still in gear.
That is correct. But we will need resources always to be able to carry out grievances, to negotiate contracts.
Do you think you're going to lose resources? Do you think a lot of people will opt out of paying union dues now that they don't have to?
I actually think that we will continue to show to our members and to nurses throughout the country the value of our unions hope that people will continue to pay. We've been able to show people exactly what we've been able to do in my facility alone. Years ago, people would have had to work until midnight and come back to work at 5:30 or 6 in the morning.
So is it no big deal? Or is it a big deal?
I think it's a big deal for workers in general. It's a big deal for the state of Michigan, which is turning the state into a corporation with people like Dick DeVos and the Koch brothers. This is not about the people anymore. It's about the corporations. So we, the people, need to be taking our state back regardless, and we will continue to work on all fronts as we move towards the 2014 election to make sure that we get people elected who care about working people and the middle class in Michigan.
Dallas Woodhouse in Raleigh, North Carolina, your group Americans for Prosperity has said this vote is the shot heard around the world in the fight to weaken unions. How important is it, does it look to you, Dallas?
Well, it looks very important, and I want to respond. I've been on hold for about 30 minutes, and there's a lot of things I'd like to respond to, including some of the just, quite frankly, ridiculous arguments of the Harvard professor. And so I'll get to that in a minute, but I think it's fair to the host of the program and to the listeners to give you sort of my perspective, because my perspective is one that is very different than everybody else.
Let's hear it.
Okay, because I come from North Carolina, the least unionized state in America, and we're proud of that. We're not only anti-union in North Carolina, we are openly hostile to unions in North Carolina, to the point where in my lifetime, local sheriff's deputies who are elected at the ballot box would be sent out at the call of the people to beat away union organizers. I mean, that's what happens in North Carolina.
Why are you hostile to unions?
Well, I mean, because what we saw in North Carolina over history is that North Carolina, that had been sort of a backwater state that had not developed very much, as unionization crept up in the north, industrialization expanded in the South, and people did not want to be in unions. They didn't want to be told what to do with their money. And we in North Carolina not only are right to work state, but we are one of only two states that forbids public employee unions. In other words, we would not allow police and firefighters to collectively bargain.
Mr. Woodhouse, let me ask you then, does that make North Carolina in some way then a free rider or a freeloader on the kind of worker benefits that union states have achieved over many decades? So you get some portion of those because
I find that to be garbage. I don't find any credibility to that. You know, it's interesting to me that this program has been on for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And nobody mentioned that Michigan has basically been in a one-state recession for a decade. You know, it's easy to question everybody's motives.
Oh, no, we see it. Look, Detroit's a mess. Detroit's a mess. Everybody knows it.
Okay, and so your professor says there's not a lot of evidence that these right-to-work states make a difference. How about he call U-Haul or Mayflower Moving and see how many moving trucks are going from Michigan and Ohio to the South? How about he call the Census Bureau, where the entire country is moving out of the unionized Northeast to the South and West to non-union areas? I mean, there is all kinds of evidence. The idea that a state like North Carolina that's right to work has fewer safety in their hospitals or fewer safety equipment. That is a joke.
Hey, Katie Oppenheim, you're listening there in Michigan where this just changed. Would you be better off without unions there?
I would strongly disagree. I'm actually a graduate of Duke University nursing school, so I'm very familiar
with
North Carolina.
Yep.
And I would not stay there and work.
Why?
I know what the work environment is like at Duke. And it is not a good place to work as a registered nurse.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a bad day for unions in Michigan, a big right-to-work law rushed through. We're looking at the future of labor and organized labor in America. Richard Freeman, big scholar in labor economics, joins us from Harvard University today. Katie Oppenheim is with us, union leader in nursing, with us today from Lansing, Michigan. She was at the demonstrations at the state capitol there yesterday when this measure was passed. With us from Right to Work State, North Carolina, Dallas Woodhouse is here. He's state director of the North Carolina chapter of Americans for Prosperity, the group that's been pushing right-to-work laws all over the country. Michigan became the 24th to adopt it yesterday. Indiana did it earlier this year. Before that, it was a long time, almost a decade back to Oklahoma. Dallas, Katie, Richard, let's hear from our listeners. Lynn in New Haven, Connecticut. Thanks for calling, Lynn. You're on.
Hi, Tom. I'm very disappointed with this, and I really think it's a bad move for the governor and the legislatures to do what they did. I actually went to Cornell to the School of Industrial Labor Relations,
yeah.
So I learned a lot about the labor movement, and this is what made the middle class. And what is happening now is big money is undermining the middle class. This country is going to go back 20 years if this keeps going.
Hey, Lynn, let me ask you, what about Dallas Woodhouse's point? He says, look at the economic troubles in Michigan. Look south and see all the factories that have come in. He said, you know, yes, unions have made a tough economic environment there. It hasn't worked, is his point.
Unions have made it possible for the middle class to increase their wage, to be able to send their children to college, to be able to compete with the people that have more money. What's happening now is if only the people that have a lot of money,
yep,
have the ability to do those things, to educate their children, to have a good job, to live in a good community,
yep,
then you're going to have two classes, the very rich and the very poor.
Lynn, I appreciate your call. I'll take it to my guest. Let me get another one or two here. Ron in Springfield, Illinois. Ron, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, this has been going on for so long. You know, I'm from Muskegon, Michigan.
Great.
And have been a union worker years ago. But anyway, what I've seen is the bosses, they run a Ponzi scheme. You know, and the unions were against them, but they just didn't push against the law.
Well, this is the big wealthy family in Michigan. What do you mean Ponzi,
yeah,
scheme or push?
Well, that's how their business would organize. They take money from people like a lottery system, tell them, hey, you can have a chance to get rich. They never get rich, but they use the money against the working class.
So what's happening with the working class here, in your view, Ron?
Well, that's exactly. The wealthy, like the lady before me has said, will use all their power. They collect power, and then they divide. And they like it when they divide, because then they can conquer, you know, and they've conquered the workers. The conflict here is going to be when people have to go with work rules. Like, what will a worker do when he's, you know, told that, you know, to turn a wrench, and he's a non-union worker, and he's not supposed to turn a wrench? He'll have the right to turn the wrench. You know, there will be so much conflict inside these shops and factories. And if people go on strike, and what is a nurse going to do that says she's not a union worker and abide by union work rules? You know, this is the thing that I don't understand exactly, but the wealthy win by dividing, you know, collecting power and dividing.
Ron, we've got it, and safe driving on your way back to Muskegon. Richard Freeman, what about this? Does it mean you're going to have people who don't have to, you know, abiding by different rules within the same shop here under this kind of legislative structure?
No, I think most people will behave normally with their coworkers.
Normally meaning follow
work rules. Yeah, do what the rules are.
But do they have to?
And there'll be minimal amount of this problem because Americans, we just don't have a history of people divided greatly at the workforce. I mean, it's certainly true that the employers have always tried to divide workers. You know, if you go back to the days when they would try to have different groups in their factories who speaking different languages,
mm-hmm,
so the workers
couldn't get together. Yeah.
But I think that's a time past. I think the correct, both the two callers, the correct thing, mm-hmm, is the country has moved to a small number of people with huge amounts of money. The income distribution in the U.S. would put us in the bottom third of African countries who are very unequal. Mm. I mean, we are off the map. And it's correct. Once somebody has a lot of money, they use it to try to strengthen their position. And that means putting down, in this case, unions. Of course, it's also true the unions have not been very smart in their—
In what way?
Well, for a long time, they just sat there and they kind of said, well, we still got our strongholds and we don't—
Goodbye, Michigan.
Yes, that's right. And then there was a sense of, well, for the workers who aren't union, it's not our job to help them. Whereas the unions have always been at their strongest when they're trying to help everybody.
Let me take that to Dallas Woodhouse in Raleigh. Mr. Woodhouse, how about it? You know, we've seen inequality grow enormously in this country. That has happened in the same decades that union influence has fallen. What do you make of that relationship?
It hasn't happened where I live. And so that's the nature I come to it, is that, you know, you had a caller a minute ago that talked about people not being able to go to colleges. North Carolina public universities are busting at the seams with enormously low public tuition costs and high graduation rates because college is readily available to the middle class and the lower class in North Carolina, partly because we have a strong, you know, other than this last recession, North Carolina has breezed through the last few recessions, partially because we're a right-to-work state. I mean, these things you know, if this is so bad for Michigan, you know, we're going to see an already high moving rate go higher. I predict you in a year, the moving rate out of Michigan will stabilize and people will start coming back.
But what about the inequality issue, Mr. Woodhouse? I mean, I imagine that North Carolina is not exempt from the inequality trends that the whole country— Good for you on your state university attendance. That's fantastic. But I'm pretty confident that your inequality mirrors that in the rest of the country.
Yeah.
And this has happened when union power has fallen.
Yeah, I just don't accept that, and I don't accept that it's a problem. I think that people have a right to make as much money as they want to, as long as they do it in a legal way. And the way for other people to make money is to work hard, invent products, and make themselves more valuable. I don't think taking from one and giving to another with obnoxious work rules and artificial telling people how to run their business is the way to do it. And I just—
Of course, you literally work for the Koch brothers, the group that they founded, right? So, I mean,
I work for America for Prosperity.
Yes.
I don't talk to David and Charles Koch. They probably don't know my name. But let me say one thing about—
Yes.
Since there are so many people, including your Harvard professor, that like to question everybody's motives, I will tell you one thing about some of the people you've talked about who are very wealthy. They have plenty of money, and they are not in this for the money. They are in public policy because they believe it is right. They believe workers— you had a caller from Michigan who said she wouldn't work at Duke University's hospitals. That is constantly rated in North Carolina as one of the best workplaces. You know what? She doesn't have to. And nobody's going to tell her she can work there. Nobody's going to tell her if she does, she has to join a union. There are wealthy people that believe that the way they got wealthy are freedom, freedom of association, freedom of movement, and freedom of their own money.
Dallas, we've got it, and you're hot on it, and we've got it. Katie Oppenheim, what do you say? Wise up. The wealthy are for you. They've got an ideology that would work for you, too, union leader.
Yeah, that I would completely disagree with that. First of all, as a registered nurse and a member of the Michigan Nurses Association, nurses are never going to be wealthy. But the gentleman in North Carolina, I'm sure he hopes that he and his family will have a well-rested, educated, registered nurse who's got the proper training and
whiffing in they need it, yeah,
to be able to take care of him. So,
and every time I've been at the hospital, I've had that.
That is just
never had a problem.
That is just not true. So
can you tell me it's not true when I went to the hospital, lady?
Excuse me, I think I'm on now. I think so.
Yeah. Yes,
I would
you are.
Say, thank you. I would say that for us, we only because we have collective bargaining have we been able to negotiate these things. At my facility at the University of Michigan, they just built the most expensive building in the state at the cost of $800 million last year, and they couldn't— they had to hire hundreds and hundreds of nurses who came to our facility because they knew that they were going to have good work conditions, that would have never happened otherwise.
Katie, let me get another listener in here or two.
Sure.
John in Fort Benton, Montana. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
A comment or two. First, I'm honored as a union member to pay my dues, because I know that I stand on the shoulders of giants. I'm able to make a decent living for myself and my family because American men, women, and children died for disability. As far as the idea that police and fire were exempt in Michigan because their well-being depends on a lack of animosity, 13 workers a day die in the United States. Every 2 hours now. So by the time you're through with the show, a worker will die. I would say we need that type of cooperation all across our workplace.
Big picture, what do you see going on, John? Big picture.
Well, it leads to my question. You know, what I see is this conflict or this paradox. In the United States, we have made progress. We're making progress on individual rights. Gay marriage, the civil rights movement for people of color, women's. And I know there's a lot of way to go on that. But at the same time, you see this lack of progress on a class level. And, perhaps your professor there from Harvard could address that. Jefferson Cowie, I would call him associate of your professor there in Cornell, talked about it. Krugman talked about it. But in a country that claims to be Christian, and every major Christian denomination supports collective bargaining rights, why is it that in the United States we don't see the progress we see on the individual level?
On the class front, maybe on the labor front. John, we've got it. I'm very grateful for your call. What about, and that's interesting, individual rights, gay rights, people see that there's things moving along here, but John calls in from Montana to say he sees it going the other way when it comes to class. What do you say, Richard?
Well, I mean, the inequality is a sign of the class, the divergence, and the country does have a different view towards collective rights than it has towards individual rights. You go back in our history, that's always been something that's troubled Americans. We generally prefer to think of ourselves as great individualists.
But mid-20th century, we had big collective rights agreements all over the place, lots of people in unions. What is it about our economy, our political moment, the world economy that's brought labor so low now, union labor?
I think our labor has been brought low because when the Great Depression occurred, everybody could see they needed this collective.
Yeah, but we just had our own big whack on that score. We had our own super recession.
Right. We avoided the Great Depression.
I see.
And we had some recovery, and that meant that people could still see that they themselves may be able to advance without that much of collective activity. It's also true that the unions have become incredibly insular, and they are the group that's bringing the collective action to us. And I think they need to do a lot of looking at themselves, to reforming themselves and reaching out to other people. I mean, they may never be able to get the Koch brothers to sign a union card, but there are a lot of Americans who can use some collective power.
I mean, you got people worried about. Blake is writing into us. He says, "Hell yes, let's bring back the days of low wage child labor and the Triangle Shirt Factory fire. Why should Bangladesh have all the fun?" Kind of fairly tart there on the recent terrible factory fire in Bangladesh. Spencer in Charlotte, North Carolina, Dallas Woodhouse's backyard. There, hi, Spencer. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
When I was younger, in my college days, I worked one summer at a textile printing factory in Rock Hill, South Carolina. It was a union shop.
Yeah.
You couldn't join without being in the union. I got minimum wage, and with the union dues, it cut almost a third of that minimum wage out. And in that shop, you couldn't move around. You had to go by what the shop foreman said, and there was a lot of nepotism going on in that place. Now, my father was also a president of a union in Rock Hill, South Carolina, at a textile company, not a textile company, a paper company.
Yeah.
There was a lot of shady dealings that I saw in the back of that.
So what do you say about right to work?
I am a right to work. I'm in favor of that, and I would not work for a union for all the money in the world.
Katie Oppenheim, who's going to on the path we're on here? I mean, it's already down to such a low portion of the American workforce, 7% in the private sector, I think.
Okay, so that could be true. Of course, as I'm sure you know, healthcare would be the area where unionization is growing the most. And certainly for nurses, we've organized thousands of nurses around this country.
But overall, you see it going the other way. Where's the bottom? Where's the floor here, Katie?
Overall, for unionization in general?
Yeah.
I would say that we're on a new path here. What just happened here in Michigan, and I can speak best to Michigan, is I think that this is a new era, a new age, where people are coming together to say, look, we see Michigan coming back. We want that to continue to occur, and we will see increased organizing of union members.
Maybe energized by what just happened there. Dallas Woodhouse, what about on your front, Americans for Prosperity? You got 24 states now with the right to work laws. You going to push that on?
Yes, here in North Carolina, because we want to keep our comparative advantage. We will look to cement right to work and our prohibition of government unions into the state constitution. If I can actually be critical of the Michigan governor for a minute, I'm sure y'all will like that. This whole excuse about the reason to exempt the police and firefighters, that's just phony, made up baloney.
Go all the way. All the way, says Dallas Woodhouse. Richard Freeman? What do you think here? Is there a natural bottom? Do we somehow turn this inequality in worker wages around in this environment or not?
We could turn the inequality around, and we can certainly worker wages can go back up. But it's hard to see where the union turning point is going to come.
Not yesterday anyway, or unless it really energizes Michigan. Richard Freeman of Harvard University, Dallas Woodhouse with Americans for Prosperity in North Carolina, Katie Oppenheim with Union in Lansing, Michigan. Thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.